Hello and welcome to the Health Innovation Podcast. In this episode, we hear how AHSNs are helping the NHS to adopt digital and artificial intelligence solutions which increase productivity, benefiting both patients and staff, what lessons have been learned, and how to evaluate the benefits from all perspectives. This is one of a series of conversations recorded with speakers at the NHS ConFed Expo 2023 event after their presentations in the AHSN Network's Innovator Zone. We're talking about how digital and artificial intelligence is transforming healthcare. And I'm with three people who are very much at the centre of that in what they do. Can you introduce yourselves, please?
Yeah, hi, my name's Sam Hayes. I'm a consultant physio and I work at Liverpool Heart and Chest Hospital.
Hi, my name's Theodora Efson and I'm head of growth at a company called Euphonia.
I'm Jenny West and I'm the Associate Director for Digital Transformation at the Innovation Agency, the AHSN for the North West Coast.
Theodora, tell us first of all about your particular innovation with Euphonia Limited. What is it you've produced and how does it use AI or digital?
Thanks, Caroline. So Euphonia is an autonomous telemedicine company. What that means is we use AI and natural language processing in order to automate routine clinical conversations. And we do that by our automated voice assistant called Dora, very sadly not named after me. And Dora works very simply by telephoning patients, asking them relevant clinical questions and also answering their questions in order to replicate a conversation that they would otherwise be having with a doctor or nurse. And we do that really with the goal of increasing the volume of high volume pathways and so really trying to put capacity back into the system. So at Euphonia, we're a team of doctors, ex-NHS staff and engineers. We really kind of recognised that often outpatient appointments were overbooked, and yet in those outpatient appointments we were often having kind of routine or repetitive conversations which we felt could be automated, and that's really why we developed Dora.
And what impact has it had so far? What's the data showing you about how it, what difference it's made?
With all of this in mind, so we built Dora to be completely scalable. So we want Dora to be able to call as many patients as possible at any one time. And that's really what Dora is doing today. And we built up lots of evidence to kind of clinically validate Dora. So we published in Nature's Journal Eye and also presented at kind of international conferences. And that's enabled us really to work very closely with the NHS in order to deploy Dora for high volume pathways. And so using the example of cataract surgery, which was our first use case and for which we're live in multiple NHS trusts, Dora is able to work across multiple points in that pathway. So for pre-op assessments, post-op assessments, and also for PROMS collection. And to give you an example of some of the data, so we've been able to automate over 5,000 appointments to date. For follow-up appointments, we are typically discharging two-thirds of patients. So what that means is we're removing two-thirds of follow-up appointments that would otherwise need to be carried out by a nurse. And so really freeing up that activity, which can then be used for higher volume clinical activities and enabling nurses crucially to work at the top of their license. For pre-op assessments and for PROMS collection, we're getting kind of really high completion rates and really radically changing the capacity of those pathways. So for pre-op appointments, reducing the amount of time that patients are needing to spend in clinic and enabling staff to have really kind of targeted conversations with patients when they do attend.
Sam Hayes, consultant physiotherapist. Yeah. What is it you've done with your patients with using digital and that's made a difference?
We started looking at sort of the PR pathway sort of pre-pandemic, and what we found actually is that there's a lot of patients who don't want to or can't access sort of traditional pulmonary rehab pathways. And then with sort of the advent of the COVID pandemic, a lot of services were disbanded. So we were trying to look at a way that we could keep services running while we weren't able to do necessarily face-to-face sort of treatment options for our patients. So we scoped out sort of any sort of digital exercise prescription platforms that were already in existence with the local service leads for pulmonary rehab across the region, and we decided to pilot a digital exercise prescription platform called Rehab Guru. The benefit of Rehab Guru is it's a massive library of over 5,000 exercises. You can pre-populate templates and pre-populate sort of warm-up and cool-down exercises, and each of those exercises is completely individualised to meet your patient need, which had a big sort of advantage over a lot of the other digital platforms that were already in existence and already being used in the system. So we decided to pilot that in 4 sites across the region to see if we could sort of increase access and uptake of rehab, which, and obviously sort of like we analysed the data and things afterwards with a company called Unity Insights. And what we found actually that we can increase sort of access and acceptability of rehab for our patients. We found that we had really good completion rates when we compared that to traditional rehab. So when we looked at our sort of pilots data sites, about 60% of patients were completing a traditional pulmonary rehab programme. But when they went on a digital programme, that actually increased up to 68% across the 4 sites. But when we analysed one services data in particular, that actually increased to 80%, which is amazing. We also looked at the clinical outcomes for the patients, and we found that it was comparable to face-to-face rehab. So this is a really sort of good offer for patients who might not be able to or might not want to access that traditional pulmonary rehab. We also looked at sort of workforce modelling that went along with that to see the impact on the workforce. And what we found is for patients that were completing digital rehab, we managed to save each clinician 77 minutes of their time per patient completing the programme. We also found that from running the pilots that actually we could look at different sort of staff groups managing these patients. And if we could do that at scale, then we've actually got real potential to sort of save hospital admissions and save costs associated with the NHS. So we're running a stage 2 pilot now to look at band 4s managing this sort of cohort of groups. So again, to free up senior clinicians to manage those sort of higher acuity patients that they should be managing.
It's very exciting to hear about the impacts for patients not having to wait so long for their cataracts and for people having pulmonary rehabilitation. Obviously, the compliance has improved, so they must be enjoying it. It must be good for patients as well as for staff, as you say. I just wonder how far we can go with acceptability of digital. Jenny, you're working in the Northwest Coast, aren't you, with virtual wards and system-wide digital transformation. Tell me, what is it you're doing in that area?
So at the moment we're evaluating the impact of virtual wards across Cheshire and Mersey, and part of that is a qualitative piece of work actually that is about the theory of acceptability of the intervention of virtual wards and digitally enabled care at home. So any technologies that are used, so like Rehab Guru, being used in your own home, and how patients find that and how acceptable that is to them, to the carers, and also to the staff that are delivering the care.
Is there a danger that some patients get left behind in the excitement of seeing the numbers go up, of those using it and accessing it and perhaps waiting lists going down? But will there be some people who will be left behind?
There will be unintended consequences to digitally enabling patients in their own homes. We're already seeing some of that, and we want to monitor that and just acknowledge that whilst it's great and it's going to help and it helps patients, they want to be at home and it's better for them, they recover better at home. So for carers, say, if you aren't where you might have had a bit of respite while that patient was in hospital, your person you're caring is in hospital, that respite won't be there anymore. Those patients will be now back at home, and the carer who obviously wants their loved one at home, but it means they haven't had that time away. So I think there's something about understanding that that is going to happen, and that actually what do we do then to support carers in the community?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, and it's something, you know, we think about a lot. I guess one of the kind of key elements of the work that we do is, as I said before, trying to take away that kind of routine and repetitive element of consultations and really trying to free up time for the patients who need it the most and need that expert input. To give you an example for kind of pre-op assessments, we typically find about 6% of patients when we call them with DORA before they've had their pre-op appointment sent to them. About 6% of patients actually don't want cataract surgery or are unsure about having it. And those are patients that would otherwise have come to clinic and had a full kind of evaluation had that conversation with the nurse. And so what that means is that we're freeing up that clinic space to be spent with the patients who actually do want surgery. And so enabling that to kind of smooth out and streamline the process.
Yeah, it's an important point, isn't it, about making sure that we're not worsening sort of inequalities for patients and things. So certainly, you know, we've been working really hard on like a digital inclusion sort of plan. So for patients who do want to access digital services and it's the right sort of pathway for them for their pulmonary rehab, we've got kit that we can loan out to people so we're not widening those sort of health inequalities. But what sort of, as Theodore sort of already mentioned, that actually, you know, if we're sort of streamlining off those patients who don't, you know, all patients don't need the same level of input, and actually for those patients who you can manage and they can get good clinical outcomes with a sort of a more of a light touch, then they can go for that pathway that's suitable for them. But for those patients who do need more support and sort of that expert clinician support, then we're making sure that actually they get earlier access to treatment as well.
How far do you think this can go? How far can we go in having digital clinicians, as it were, replacing physiotherapists, ophthalmologists, medics who would normally perhaps see a patient face-to-face, but they're looking at their observations remotely? How far can we go? How big a change is it going to be?
I think with the advent of AI and the amount of data we collect, the possibilities are infinite. I mean, in a lot of the books that I've read around it, around the jobs that might be replaced by AI, medicine is one of the last ones to be replaced. Healthcare will be one of the last ones because it needs a level of human interaction. But we are gathering huge data sets and people are gathering them personally on their own. They're gathering through remote monitoring in their own homes. We're getting better digitization in hospitals with the EPRs going in. So we are gathering huge data sets that we could do really interesting work with, really preventative work with patients. But they've also got to be along on the journey and they've got to trust that we're using that data appropriately and ethically. And I think that's a really big challenge across that, and really bringing the patients along for that journey and not just using the data because we think it's for the greater good, as you would, making sure that it's for the right reasons and that they see the benefit of it.
So how do we do that then?
I was just going to totally agree with Jenny, as in I think at the moment we're only really scratching the surface and there's so much more that we can do. I mean, we started with kind of high volume, low complexity pathways and with cataract surgery, as I mentioned, but there are multiple other pathways where digital tools are very much just kind of beginning to be used. And I think that kind of patient acceptability point is so important. And we always try and push for the highest quality DORA conversations that we can have. And ultimately, we hope that that offers patients a standardized and high quality form of accessing care that really kind of is additive and makes the service even better than it could ever be with a workforce which is limited by capacity. And so we really hope that kind of that scalability of technology will be a useful tool that will make healthcare only get better.
Sam, I always think of physiotherapy as being very hands-on. It seems counterintuitive, doesn't it, to have AI digital taking the place of a physiotherapist.
Yeah.
How can it do that?
I mean, it does to a certain extent. And I think there's some roles that you'll never be able to replace and you'll need that hands-on physio or that hands-on therapy because we provide therapy. But there are sort of certain aspects of anyone's job that you can sort of digitise and make sort of more efficient. I'm sort of thinking, you know, how we could sort of tailor self-management advice, educational sessions to the patients. AI could do that really well. There's sort of obviously a big role in them collecting sort of like outcome measures and patient questionnaires that we use quite routinely, but actually that is quite time consuming for clinicians, you know, especially if the patient needs that little bit of support to sort of complete those sort of questionnaire sets. And again, even some of the sort of high volume sort of assessments that we do, it's the same sort of question set that we're asking, so there's no reason why AI couldn't support with some of that data collection, because then actually when that information comes through to your therapist, you probably could have a much better sort of consultation and much better outcomes for your patients.
So we're hearing a lot of fear about artificial intelligence. It's going too fast. You know, people who have leading roles in companies which actually are producing AI products are saying that. And it's at government level now. You know, what do we do to perhaps decelerate the development of AI? But the NHS has always been a laggard in innovation. So is it a threat? Is the trustworthiness of AI a threat in the NHS?
At the end of the day, the AI will generally do what you ask it to do, and it's the human level of what we want it to do that might be the issue. We tend to be the issue, the humans operating it, that causes some of the fear with it and how it can then run off on its own. I think that's quite advanced stuff, and the NHS is very, very far behind. We're still on, you know, we're still just getting digitised and getting the data together, and our data isn't always the best and it isn't always easy to find, as we found with the evaluation. What we've been trying to do, finding the data to prove the digital technology is working, has been one of the harder parts of the whole evaluation. So I think we're a long way off it being too much a problem for us, and it can really offer some really it can really support the work we're trying to do and to kind of the efficiency that we need to have across the system and help our workforce. So it's got real opportunity. But I think we just got to, I think it's that ethical and responsible use of AI that we really need to consider now and be thinking much more deeply about and how we apply it to our health and social care settings. But again, patients have to be along for the journey on that one, and they have to want it to be supporting them, and they have to understand it easily and, you know, and trust that we are doing the right thing with the data.
And Euphonia, of course, as a business, not part of the NHS, is going to want to use AI to develop its products at a much faster rate, perhaps, than the NHS is ready to adopt them. You must be very conscious of that.
Yeah, I mean, everything we do, we ensure is fully kind of clinically validated and regulated. And so we kind of, as I mentioned before, have built a body of evidence to demonstrate the safety and effectiveness of DORA. And that's something we continue to do. But I think where we can use AI is to kind of make DORA better and better and more safe and more effective for patients. And that involves, you know, looking through the responses that we get from patients and things like that to ensure that if there's a frequently asked question after cataract surgery, for example, we're making sure that we're building DORA to be able to answer that question and things like that. So I think the kind of responsible and regulated use is where we can continue to demonstrate the best value and the highest kind of quality consultations as well.
And acceptability of staff as well as for patients, Sam, that's something you're probably very conscious of it working in the acute sector.
Yeah, no, it's really, really important, and staff have to be ready to embrace digital and embrace change. And that's something that we, you know, did struggle with a little bit in the pilot of sort of Rehab Guru, is that some teams just weren't ready for that digitalisation of the pathway. And I think that goes back to sort of Jenny's point, and we're so far behind within the NHS of sort of having good digital systems and AI systems. You know, we've got computer systems that don't talk to each other, and it's really hard to get that information out. So having clinicians on board is really, really key, because they're the ones that are going to be using it, so it has to be user-friendly for them but also for the patients as well. So again, we did a lot of patient sort of engagement to make sure that actually the platform was sort of suitable to patients, and if there was things that they didn't like, it was us working with the company to make it sort of more user-friendly.
Great, all sounds like reasons to be optimistic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny West, Dr. Theodora Efson and Sam Hayes. You can find links to case studies and more information about the support available from AHSNs in the podcast notes. Thank you for listening.